Committee on Judiciary, 351 State Capitol, May 11th, 1987, 1 p.m., full committee meeting.
Come to order, please. I think the first set of amendments are from sub 3 in the second, or pardon me, bills are from sub 3 in the second group for full committee or from sub 2. Let's go ahead and try, if we may, represent Hanlon with those from 3030 while we're waiting a couple more members' arrival. We could start, don't know if Representative Dix was assigned to 3030 or not. We can defer that for just a moment if you'd like to proceed with another.
That was Representative Dix was to carry that one.
I'd like to leave that at the bottom of our committee because I've got some things that Representative Dix and I have been trying to discuss, and I'd like to review them while we're working on the other bills.
Okay. How about 3188 then? Related to juvenile court procedure.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is right to jury trial for juveniles. The subcommittee looked at the issue, had hearings on it, and recommended that we adopt the bill unamended. If I recall correctly, there's a fiscal prepared by Kingsley Click, Special Assistant to State Court Administrator. We added a referral to the Ways and Means Committee, and I would move that we move that we recommend that House Bill 3188, as amended, be taken to the floor with a due pass recommendation, the effect of which would be to refer it to Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Representative Hanlon moves that House Bill 3188. Was that amended, Representative Hanlon?
No. It was not amended except for the subsequent referral.
Okay. Representative Hanlon has moved 3188 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and further recommends that it be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Was there further discussion? Representative Phillips.
Representative Hanlon, when you say you're tried by a jury of your peers, what happens when you're a juvenile?
I think that language refers, it is generic to jury trials and would not imply that people would imply that the people be selected as jurors as they have been for many years and not that they be under the age of 18.
Second question?
Representative Phillips.
Do you have a specific fiscal impact on this?
You have in your packet, or should have.
Well, unfortunately, I don't.
A fiscal impact prepared by Kingsley Click, the estimate there for 87-89 was for that biennium $460,000. However, there are, most of the time was spent in our committee over the controversy over how much it would cost and would depend on the assumptions whether it be greater or more. And that's the reason we added the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And I apologize for that not being out here. Maybe only the subcommittee has that.
Okay, so we've got approximately $500,000 from the court's estimate, but nothing from legislative fiscal, because there's some debate over just whether it would or would not cost money.
There's debate over how much.
Not whether it would, just how much it would.
Well, whether it would cost $1 or $460,000, yeah, right.
Okay, if Representative Hanlon, if I was perceiving the report, looking over your shoulder there, it was prepared by legislative fiscal, was it not?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman.
It was at least reviewed, I guess, by Katie Thorne over at the BAM analyst, or
from the way it's filled out, it would have. It would.
Okay. I guess forgetting the cost factor, then, because that's something Ways and Means can look at. Did you determine whether this would, in jury selection and that process, would lengthen the time that it would take to prosecute or arrive at any sort of decision as to a juvenile, since it certainly would lengthen the process? And at a minimum, it would lengthen it, but did you determine how much it would lengthen it? And
perhaps some other subcommittee members can remind me. I don't know that we addressed that, and I'm not sure your assumption is correct.
Counsel?
That was one of the issues that was discussed, and in fact, that's one of the elements that, you know, has gone into the fiscal impact statement. It would, some of the opponents said that it would impose undue delay. There was a certain amount of controversy over to just exactly how much delay it would cause and in what percentage of the cases.
Thank you.
Okay, is there further discussion? Representative Burton.
Representative Hanlon, make sure I understand this. In the section one, sub one, which is the basic policy statement, it says that if I understand, there is an allowance there that the trials will be by court except upon the request of the child. What's the status of the child in this case in making that request? If they're a minor, and you're talking about, I understand that this also relates to the termination of parental rights proceedings. You go by trial. What is that? What is the status of the child in the case of making that request then as a minor?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Representative.
Well, how does the child makes a request? The child is represented by an attorney, I take it. What's the situation if the child has parents? And they are under the and there is no emancipation. So the child is under the. Can a child make, in fact, a separate request for a trial in the case of the parents object?
Well, the way this is written, I would. Counsel, did you have a comment?
Well, who is able to request the jury depends on the type of case. Since the bill as written applies to basically all juvenile court procedure, including termination of parental rights, if the child has committed an act that would be a crime if it were committed by an adult, the child has to request the jury trial. I mean, it's a right of the child. If you're talking about dependency, neglect, jurisdiction, those sorts of things, the child or the parent could request the jury trial. And in the termination of parental rights, it's either the parent or the child if the child is, I believe it's 12 years of age or older. Yes.
Well, could I follow up on that question?
Representative Phillips.
If it's a termination case, counsel, or a child abuse case or something along that line, and the way I read this bill, the child, and from your description, the child could ask for a jury trial, would that also entitle in any way them for defense, indigent defense costs being what they were? Could then, since we now give the child standing, would they then be entitled to some sort of special defense?
Child already has standing.
Yeah.
Well, I think. Do you want to comment on that?
My sense is that the child, and I could be corrected by folks here in the audience know better than I, that the child has an interest which can be or ought to be, and I believe is protected by appointed counsel in the termination proceeding.
We're talking about all cases now, though.
Well, the child's entitled to counsel.
In every circumstance.
Just about. Someone has a contrary opinion.
Well, I guess if it were a criminal case and the child was being accused, would the indigency revert back onto the parent or the guardian, or would it be just judged upon the child?
I don't have an answer for that.
Mr. Chairman, I really think, though, that Representative Phillips is talking in an area of the law where the child is already entitled to counsel, and that those issues, I don't have an answer right off the bat, but those issues are dealt with at present.
Well, I don't doubt that the child has the right to counsel. The question is, who pays? The answer I hear you saying is this doesn't change existing process at all, so whoever pays now would pay depending on whether we pass this or not.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah. Angela?
Lieutenant Hanlon, do you want to get some further clarification?
Yeah, maybe so. Angela, do you want to, you're going to have to come up and identify yourself on the tape. Can you respond to Representative Phillips' inquiry?
Angela Sherbo from the Juvenile Rights Project. I think that the question about counsel, children are statutorily entitled to counsel upon their request, so that if a child requests counsel in any of these situations, irrespective of whether or not there's a jury right, the statute, the juvenile code, allows that. The Oregon Supreme Court has ruled on the issue of whether a child's constitutionally entitled to counsel in a termination case, and the answer is basically it's a case-by-case decision. The judge has to decide. With respect to who pays, the parent or the estate of the child, if able, is responsible for reimbursing the state for the cost of the child's representation, whether that be in a delinquency case or whether that be a child who's the subject of a dependency or termination case, so that the indigency is determined by the parents. But assuming that the parent becomes able or the child's estate becomes able, they are obligated then to pay back the state. I don't think that the extension of the jury right to these kind of cases affects at all the entitlement of any of the participants to appointed counsel. It's a separate constitutional determination.
Lieutenant Phillips.
Thank you. Angela, I assume that the Juvenile Rights Project brought this to the legislature because they had seen a pattern of perceived abuses or problems with the children receiving proper consideration or something through the jury through the existing process where the judge would make a determination?
I don't think that's exactly the case. Certainly we have seen abuses in the juvenile court system, as all of you have seen abuses in every system under which we operate, but as a whole, we're real satisfied with the kinds of representation kids get and the quality of the bench in juvenile court. It seems to us that in those rare instances, and all the evidence that we've been able to gather is that it is a very rare instance, in those rare instances where a family, if it's a dependency or termination case, feels that the judge has a particular prejudice against their racial group or knows their family, the family's been through the court, and wants the judgment on their parenting abilities to be made by a cross-section of the community, that right ought to be available. And the same thing for a child charged with a crime. And we feel, based on the experience in other states, that the existence of the right in and of itself, even as infrequently as we expect it to be exercised, based on all of the experience elsewhere, will have a real good effect on the system as a whole. We don't expect it to have anywhere near the fiscal impact that's projected, and that's why we'd be happy to see it go to Ways and Means.
Representative Phillips?
Well, you answered me saying that you really like the system and you don't have any real complaints about the problem now, except in those rare cases where there may be a problem. In a juvenile case, do you have an opportunity to ask for a different judge? Is there the same process to go through?
The same process exists, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative
Burden. As long as you're here, in a case of it, where you mentioned that the parents may feel that they want to have a cross-section of the community judging their case, if I understand this, trial shall be by the court except upon the request of the child. Now, how, and that goes back to my original question, the child can request the jury that it not be by trial, and who represents the child in that case? How is that request made?
In some instances, the child will be represented by an attorney. In other instances, there's a provision in the code for appointing a suitable person to represent the child. In it, it was our intent, and I believe the way it will play out in practice, is that in dependency and abuse cases and termination cases, the real decision about whether or not to request an attorney will be made. The only party really considering it will be the parent, because that's the party who's basically being proceeded against. But we did allow for, in those cases, a request by a child. We don't expect those to happen very frequently, and obviously they would be in cases with older children who would, upon being advised by the court, exercise it themselves, or children who are represented.
Further questions? Discussion? Okay, we're on Representative Hanlon's motion to refer the bill out favorably with a subsequent referral to a Ways and Means Committee. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Martin?
No.
Dix?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Miller?
Oh.
Phillips?
No.
Springer?
Aye.
Chairman, I'd like to change my vote to no.
Okay, Bunn changes to no. 5-4. Motion's adopted. Okay, 3345.
Mr. Chair, I'm the assigned carrier out of the Juvenile Subcommittee on this bill. The bill as amended takes care of some shortfalls in the system of dealing with delinquent youth, and particularly the object of the bill, and there was no testimony in opposition to it, and as it was originally drafted, was intended to provide a backup for community services, community detention probation services, and treatment programs. The amendment would allow juvenile court to order a parole violator from a state facility to be detained in a juvenile facility for up to 30 days. That was something that was just simply, I think it's an oversight in the existing scheme, and it had been proposed in another bill, and the committee added it to 3345. Basically, what this does is provide support to community-based treatment. I would, are you ready for a motion,
sure.
Mr. Chair? I would move House Bill 3345 as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Bellman has moved House Bill 3345 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And the amendments have been adopted in subcommittee. Okay. Is there further discussion on the bill? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bauman, did you want to carry that bill?
Yes.
Okay. 3013.
3013 is also my assignment from the subcommittee, Mr. Chair. 3013 addresses the ability of the court to see that case management for a child in state custody is carried out in what the court sees as the best interest of the child. It gives the court the authority to enforce appropriate treatment, gives the court authority to address CSD while CSD is in court with a child with regard to appropriate treatment. There is a major issue that's discussed, and it's in the material, and I want to just raise it myself, and that is whether this would impact CSD's ability to qualify for federal funds. It was an issue that CSD raised during hearings, and this really is a balance between wanting CSD to be more accountable to community standards and wanting the court to have more direct control over services that are provided and some agency independence that CSD wants and that is contemplated in the Title 4E funds. I think that you've got a letter in front of you from the Department of Health and Human Services, and all that I can say and comment on the letter is that CSD's testimony was that this is relatively few cases that would be impacted, and that CSD's argument to the court in a situation where the court appeared to be assigning some kind of provision of service that was going to cost CSD federal funds, I would think that CSD would provide that argument to the court and that the court would act accordingly.
Okay. Let's say Hanlon, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Mr. Chair, if CSD is opposed to it, I think that would help it a lot on the floor.
Quick question.
Representative Phillips?
Representative Hanlon, when you went through it, the amendments are some minor in scope, major in impact, give some responsibility to the courts. We've heard testimony time and time again about how overburdened courts are, judges are, and staff are. Who's going to follow up, physically do the follow-up, to make sure that CST is actually doing what the court has mandated to be done?
The provisions in 3013-1. Yeah, I assume that's what you're speaking
about. Well, I was trying to find it in the original bill, and yes, I am talking off of dash 1.
Well, the purpose of the dash 1 was to meet the federal financing things that you heard earlier, Representative Phillips, in that the court wouldn't actually be doing the care, supervision, or services and actual planning, but the court would have oversight on that the care, supervision, and services.
Okay, maybe I can ask it a little clearer. They write the plan and the provisions of care and the supervision are the services. Who in the court system is going to read the plan to make sure that everything is indeed in order? Who physically is going to do that?
The court that makes the order has the power to do that and keep control of the case to the extent that its initial order isn't followed. That's how the courts work in this in any state. I suppose the answer to your question would be up to the affirmative action of the court.
Okay, I guess, Tom, can you tell me how many cases this is going to apply to that the courts now are going to review the supervision planning section?
I can't recall if we had testimony, Representative Allen.
I don't think there was testimony as to the number of cases, and I think what this does, courts already have the authority. In fact, there are mandated review dates for these cases, and we've already made some adjustments to the Citizens Review Board. I mean, the tone of the policies that we're implementing so far in this subcommittee tend to be moving in a direction of having more accountability, keeping closer track of what's going on with these kids. And I think that one of the things that this bill does is it doesn't mandate that the court shall in every case be directing what appropriate treatment is, but what it does is it gives the court that ability, and then the court on its regular review and CSD in its reports to the court will be addressing, and these reports are done and the reviews are done now, will be addressing really the appropriateness of the treatment toward a goal which I think is set by the court. So if you're in a position of establishing the goal of treatment, it only seems appropriate that you would be allowed the ability to set the direction toward that goal. And that's the object of 3013.
Well, Representative Baumann, in your discretion, three times you referred to the court's power already to do something and referred once to CSD having to fit certain timelines and get the material back to the court. I therefore have to ask why the need for the bill if the court can do it already and CSD already responds to them.
No,
and I guess to follow up, the one major flaw in this bill as I read it is that there are timelines at every step of the process. Why are there no timelines in this bill?
The other timelines of the process apply to the procedures in this bill.
Okay, so everything in existence now either exists or apply to this, then why do we need it?
Because right now the court does not have the ability to order specific treatment, which seems kind of like a flaw in the system, since the court at the time of making its adjudicatory decision has all the information in front of it. It just heard arguments of counsel, has just heard arguments of CSD. If you look at all the state expenditure that is in front of the court to give the court information at that point, it only seems reasonable that we would empower the court to make a treatment decision, but we don't.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. There are some other supporting materials in your files, including a letter from Judge Harrell from Multnomah County, who states the fundamental issue, as he explains, is one of accountability in terms of providing or fulfilling the public's expectations that our judicial department and our elected judges are in fact responsible for what happens to abused or neglected children, notwithstanding the duties of governmental agencies. Okay, Representative Baumann, I believe got a motion on the bill as amended to the floor. Did pass?
I so moved.
Okay, Representative Baumann moves House Bill 3013 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Baumann?
Aye.
Melanie?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Ringa?
Aye. Representative Baumann, would you like the honors on that also?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank
you. Okay,
3197. Mr. Chairman, has to do with rights of others than the parents of children in custody and visitation matters. And counsel, can you make sure that we all have the amendments, proper amendments, and that were adopted in sub.
Okay, the amendments that we adopted two sets of amendments, and I had them drafted up in the single LC version, which is 3197-7.
And the first element dealt with Representative Hooley. Former Representative Hooley's request on 109.119, we had amended that last session, and there were some difficulties on interpretation that Representative Hooley brought to Subcommittee 3, including the issues of who would qualify and when a person could petition the court in regard to custody, guardianship, and visitation matters. I'm just trying to find the the people that we're talking about are foster parent, step-parent, grandparent, relative by blood or marriage, or any other person who has emotional ties to the child and has had physical custody. These are the people that we're talking to. This bill was intended to give the court an outline of when those people have the right to come into court and petition for rights of custody, guardianship, or visitation. The second part of this bill deals with grandparents' right of visitation. Let me see if I can find it. It would allow a grandparent to petition. And if you look at page 3 of the -7 amendments at the bottom of the page, 24 on for reasonable visitation rights, if the grandparent has established or attempted to establish ongoing personal contact with the child and the custodian of the child has denied the grandparent a reasonable opportunity to visit with the child.